From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio, the voice of America's veterans. This is Dale Thronberry, and joining me today is my co-pilot, Bob Gould, who's talking to himself in the control room.
Stand in the door. Close it up.
A lot of things going on today. We're going to be talking with one of our favorite guests who's been on the program a couple of times, back in the days, the beginning days. We are coming up on our 10th anniversary, and we were just kind of reminiscing this morning. We'll be talking in a little while with Don Burgett and about his new Kickstarter program to help get his older books, I guess you could say older books, republished and out there to the public. And they're great stories, starting with Normandy and to the Battle of the Bulge, to the opening of the concentration camps. This guy's got some great stories, and he's going to be back with Bob in a little bit. Bob will be interviewing Don and his daughter, Renee, to talk about this new Kickstarter project. And there's a couple of things in the news that I wanted to mention that... we've got Nina running the board right now. Maria's back there on our social media manager. If you want to contact us, you can first of all use the old-fashioned way. Call us at 877-573-7825. Or you can contact us by Facebook. That's facebook.com/veteransradio. Or even Twitter. Twitter.com/veteransradio. And Maria will be sending out little messages as we go along. And there are two stories I wanted to bring up right now. And Bob, are you pay attention here? I want you to... This one is pertains to you because it's one of your favorite people. It's Emil Capone.
Oh, yeah.
And as you know, he is up for sainthood. Or maybe you don't know.
Right.
But he is up for sainthood. And
beatification, they call that.
And I just got an article about that, and it says that his canonization as a Roman Catholic saint, if it happens, will come with an unusual twist. It says most of the crucial testimony about his Korean War heroics have been supplied by impassioned remnants of his former prisoner of war friends, nearly all of whom are Protestants. And this is kind of really unusual. Another is a lapsed Catholic, and they're all coming back, but it says having non-Catholics testify in a sainthood investigation is a good thing, said your other friend, Reverend John Hotze, who is of the Wichita Diocese, and who's collecting the evidence for Capone's heroics in the Vatican investigation. It adds to the authenticity in that Catholics are familiar with saints and with the canonization process. He says, generally with Protestants, it's all foreign to them. That would be me. But I think it's so cool that all of this is finally coming to fruition. We've been talking about Father Capone for 10 years, and he's finally received his, or, you know, posthumously, obviously, but he received his Medal of Honor, and now we're going on to the next step.
I think that we could remind our listeners at this time to go on the archives. This program that we did this year was in response to the White House delivering the Medal of Honor personally to his... Not sure if it was his wife. No, it wouldn't be a wife. No, what was it? Sister or something? Couldn't be a wife. What am I thinking about?
Right, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking here.
Maybe
I'm thinking,
nephew or something.
All this stuff is rattling around up there. But so please go on our archives. Go to veteransradio.net and click on archives. I think it was February, wasn't it, Dale?
Somewhere around there. And actually, just by Googling Father Capone, I think it'll show up that he was on Veterans Radio.
And what was way cool, folks, way cool, is at the very end, we were able to find, prior to the program, a soldier that had been in Camp Number 5 with Father Capone. In fact, was there the day he died. We had him on the program, and you're going to hear his words talking about Father Capone and reading the 21st Psalm. Is that it? The 23rd Psalm.
Right.
And... boy, it's really moving. So check that out on the archives.
I think it's a really powerful program, and of course, I think it's a really powerful story about this amazing man who sacrificed himself. But I think, you know, we always talk about heroes and so forth, and talking with veterans and myself included, and you know, all the heroes are the ones that are buried around the world in the various military cemeteries. They're the ones that did not come back, and we were just the lucky and fortunate ones. And so I think it's a great story, and I'm anxious to follow it and see where, you know, that he becomes a saint. And again, not being Catholic, I'm not familiar with the whole process, but I do understand that becoming a saint is a very big deal.
Big deal. And there needs to be confirmed miracles is part of the criteria, and that has been established, too. So he's at the last stage now and is being reviewed right now. And that's all through the Wichita Archdiocese, Archdiocese of Wichita, the Wichita Eagle. I'm trying to think now of the editor's name, but they did, some of their reporters did a DVD on Father Capon, and that's available. I believe you go to the Wichita Eagle website and probably can find out.
You
there.
Can find
or,
it. There.
Or even Father Capon.
Yeah.
That's K-A-U-P-A-P-O-N. K-A-U-P-O-N.
Right. Right. Oh, let me check that for sure. You know, where would we be without these computers? K-A-P-A-U-N.
A-U-N.
A-U-N. Right. Well, you know, sometimes we're getting older, we forget letters.
Letters? What comes after A?
Hey,
I mean, I did it just now. What? Talking about the guy's wife. He's a priest. Please. Lord.
Watch out.
I know.
Not to worry, Bob. I have another story that you're going to like, I think.
Uh-oh.
This is you're ready for this? This would be go back to your expert in the Air Force. The Air Force achieves drone fighter jet first with the F-16 Fighting Falcon. It is entirely automated. It takes off, lands, flies at 40,000 feet at 1,119 miles an hour, and it was demonstrated a series of combat maneuvers to evade attack by any aircraft, missile lock-ons, and a whole bit. This is a genuine, real-life airplane.
It's and by the way, we did cover this. Dr. Rebecca Grant, spokesperson for the Air Force, her think tank, does all the numbers crunching,
right,
et cetera, for the Air Force. We covered that, that these pilotless planes now, they've done it all. They have all the capabilities. We're talking pilotless fighters.
When I saw this, I just shook my head. I'm going, turning fighter jets into drones to create the next generation of aerial combat training. Boeing took retired fighter jets and has retrofitted them with drone technology.
Well, when I watch, they have a wonderful program on the military channel, and it's called Combat Planes, and they really do a great job with animation, 3D, etc. Boy, I don't know how you can take the pilot out of the equation, because so many times, folks, these guys are flying by the seat of their britches. So, it's like... Yeah, but is there going to be some guy with a joystick in Denver, Colorado, going to be able to have that same attitude and that same... There were times when those fighter pilots broke tradition, they went out and they got the job done anyway. Can a drone do that? What do you think, Dale?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to find out. It certainly looks like a program for the future, because it says right now they're using their QF-16s are being used for pilot training, and they're being used as the targets for regular pilots inside their aircraft. And so they're using this F-16 as the bad guys, and they're chasing, you know, the planes around the sky.
That brings back one of our prior guests, Chuck Yeager, General Yeager, retired Air Force. We all know who he is, right? A true, bona fide, absolutely American hero. One of the original Wright stuff. Somebody who really, really had it. And I was talking with our guest today, Don, about the Battle of Bastogne and the Battle of the Bulge, and when the clouds lifted on December 23rd, who came in but the fighters, the P-51s, and just blasted heck out of the tanks. I bet you Don's shaking his head right now, right? Yeah, he knows. And, well, can a drone do that? Come on. Those guys came down down the treetop level. Somebody with a joystick not going to be able to do that. They broke all the rules in the world.
I don't know. You can talk to the young ladies in our control room right now that probably play video games that are more realistic than the real world is. And they get the same sensation on some of those games of getting down treetop level and just blasting away at the bad guys. I just thought this was kind of a really cool story.
I don't see, though. I mean, you have to improvise in war.
Well, you always have to have a plan B. C, right, D,
but Dale,
E, and F.
Dale, how many times did you go from A, B, C, D, and then there, seat of my pants, Dale, I got to save my skin and go out there and do it. A drone doesn't think about saving their skin, so they, well, time to get back to the base, sir, robot, you know.
I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting.
I think it's going to be, yes.
Very interesting, and it's something that we need to follow along with some of these stories. And this is a type of thing. And we want to remind our audience out there that if you have any ideas for stories, let us know about them. We didn't, you know, we don't meet all of these people in our everyday life, but thanks to you, we get contact information. We talk to these veterans, male and female, going back to World War II and on up into Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, yesterday I was talking to a young lady whose husband is actually going to be deploying to Afghanistan for the third time next year. And I thought this whole thing was over. And he's going to be there for 9 months. And if you want to talk about the problems that are going on in Washington with budgets and everything else, you know what they've eliminated? They've eliminated the trip home because it costs too much. So the 2 week I wouldn't say vacation, but the 2 week break that they would get during their deployments when they would bring them back to the States, they're not going to do those anymore.
They go right back to the barrack.
They'll go back to, I don't know,
or whatever.
Maybe someplace in Europe, or maybe they'll just do country R&Rs. But I thought that was kind of a telling about what this budget is going to do. And this is something we're going to be looking at in the next couple of weeks when we start looking at what the Congress decides to do with the military budget, because there are a lot of horror stories out there, and we want to make sure that we get the right information for you and for us, too, so we can tell our listeners.
That pre-funding, what did we call that? What was that called? We were involved in that.
Self-funded. We want to make sure that it's got the budget for the VA is guaranteed.
Guaranteed, that's right.
And it's out 2 years in advance instead of having to go to Congress every year and beg for the money.
With your knee pads.
Right, and say, hey, you know, we need X million of dollars because we need, you know, we've got these claims to process and so on and so forth. And I was, you know, in fact, the VA has come up with a kind of a, I don't want to call it a bonus program, but if you file your claim online within the next, I don't know what the dates are, I'd have to look that up, is that they'll give you a bonus if you do it electronically.
I heard that.
Instead of going and talking to people.
I heard that this past week. I heard that very same thing. And I'm thinking, whoa, is this information getting out to folks? That's right. I heard about the online.
That's what we're trying to do.
You cut the bureaucracy to less than 10%.
Yeah, because, I mean, all you're really doing, and this is no offense, obviously, to the VSOs that are out there, because they do a great job, because they know how to word your claim. But it's just filling out papers all over the place. And maybe this, if your disability claim is cut and dried, like you've lost a limb or you've been exposed to Agent Orange and you've got one of those presumptive disabilities, you can probably do it easily online. But if you've got some issues that, you know, you're trying to figure out how to massage the system, for lack of a better term, you've got to know, you know, you need help. And that's what the VSOs do. And hopefully we're going to have some VSOs here, at least one at the bottom of the hour, and to talk about. We haven't heard from them lately, so we're getting a little concerned here. But we'll be talking about
that would be way cool. I actually tested the system. I got started because I did talk to the Washtenaw County VSO, who will be on a future program. Yes, they're having a big conference right now, right at this very minute, in Michigan. I believe it's the whole southeast region or Midwest region for the government. But anyway, vet, capital V-E-T, small e, small t, rex, capital R, small e, small c, s. No.com, no.org. E, small e.
Oh, you just get your records.
Yes.
It works.
Well, yes, but then, once you, I know, but I did the .com and the .org, and I got messed around. Finally found that. Then scrolling around, it does get you to a whole bunch of websites that will help you to receive your awards, get your DD-214. But that's when the VSO person told me to do it online rather than send away for the paperwork. Do it online.
Oh, absolutely. I did that. And I got I found out that my unit had earned a presidential unit citation and all kinds of different things when I tried to get
them. Did you get them sent to you?
Yeah, they sent it to me.
Did it come in a shadow box? I heard
No, I have to make that myself if I want.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard that was.
You can order those from other many different vendors out there that'll put together a shadow box for you.
Okay, so you did get the awards, and they sent them to the house.
Yeah. Nice box, and I got replacement. I got replacement awards for stuff I didn't even know I'd earned. I said, oh, I got one of those? How about that? But yeah, and an updated. What they give you is an updated DD-214.
Yes, that's
for the civilians, that's your entire history of the world when you're in the service as a DD-214. I don't know. Is it the same number for World War II guys? Yeah, we think it's the same number.
Mm-hmm. Department of Defense, 214. Yep. There we go.
Don't lose
that. So once again, small E, capital V, small E, small T, S, capital R, capital or small E, small C, small S, and go from there. And
we'll figure that out.
We're going to be doing that. We're going to be helping folks with that.
In the meantime, I'm sorry to cut you off but we are running a little short on time here. We've got some important guests to get to, so we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to have Don Burgett and his daughter Renee will be here talking about his books and his Kickstarter program. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
We're back here on Veterans Radio. Of course, that was Caissons Go Rolling Along, the Army. That's right, that's the Army. I have with me today a very distinguished person who's been on our program a couple of times before, and we're so happy to have him back. We were able to have breakfast with our guest this morning and his daughter, and really had a chance to, once again, get caught up with just some of the activities that this World War II military veteran had experienced at the Battle of the Bulge and Bastogne. So without further ado, but before we do, it's Donald R. Burgett. Did I get that right? Don?
Pretty close. Close enough.
Close enough for government work, right?
Right.
As we all like to say. Okay, Donald R. Burgett. Donald was a member of the 101st Airborne Division. He enlisted when he was 19 years old. 19 years old. He got the call, and he was all the way from, served with the 101st, all the way from Normandy to Bastogne and beyond.
Yes.
Yes, and he has written 5 books. Yes, I must say that. One of them, Courage, is the only book that has the honor, it's an honor, an endorsement, plus a statement by President General Dwight D. Eisenhower. And what did they, the Currahee is a story of Americans, paratroopers. By the way, folks, I'm also a member of the 101st Airborne Division. Right, Don?
Good.
All right.
The best.
Yeah, close it up.
Right.
Yeah, stand on the door and
go.
Go. That's it. Yeah, man. Okay. His first book, Currahee, it's considered a classic. It was considered one of the 6 best written books on World War II. It's published by Easton Press on archival paper, bound in leather cover, and trimmed in 14-karat gold. Wow, it's also Currahee. Let me spell that too, folks. Capital C-U-R-R-A-H-E-E. That's a hill. Over there at, Don, where was that?
It's in Georgia.
Okay, Fort Benning.
Turcoa, Georgia.
Yeah. Okay.
But we called it a mountain. Well, that's because we had to run up and run down without stopping.
Well, without further ado, and let's see. Oh, he has. Well, actually, he's got a project starting right now. And I'm going to, before I introduce directly to Don Burgett, I'm going to introduce his daughter, Renee. Renee, welcome to Veterans Radio. And you have, you're sort of in charge of a Kickstarter campaign. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's a website that allows you to showcase your project in order to raise the funds you need to get that project going. So
when does that start?
That starts October 1st. We launch.
Okay. Now, you folks and Don, you're all involved. Something to do with the books. What exactly are you going to do?
Well, we're going to go ahead and take, he has regained his book rights back from the four books that he had previously published.
That was a problem?
Well, sort of.
Okay.
But over the years, you know, the books have been out for quite some time, and it was important to him to own the rights to those books so that he can do what he feels he wants to do with them. And so our goal is to republish those books in both
all
our...
All five.
Well, he has four out now, which would be republished in hard copy as well as e-book format. He does have a fifth manuscript that is not published, and he's kind of held on to that in order to have the rights to be able to do what he wants with that, and he's going to do the same thing with that, which is, again, make it in hard copy as well as e-book available to the public.
Now, to do this Kickstarter campaign, folks, you have to have a goal, and you have to have a money goal. And they have a number of weeks to reach that money goal. If they reach that money goal, then this campaign that you have, this program that you have to, would you call them, re-edit the books?
Re-edit, reformat,
into
electronic files in order to have the e-books available. And the money goes towards, again, the editing, the formatting, the artwork for the covers. It goes for translation into different languages.
Can I ask you how much money that your goal is to reach?
Well, our target funding goal is $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That will include republishing the four books as well as publishing, editing, formatting the fifth book. And it will also help fund a trip to Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
With Don for the 70th anniversary, in which we hope to launch that new manuscript on June 6th.
And let's see, 70, that's right, that would be next year.
Correct.
Next year, June. Don, what do you think about all this? Welcome to Veterans Radio, by the way.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Third appearance, folks.
Yes, it's nice to be back. And you don't look a day older.
sometimes I feel that way. But you know, your voice is so... he's always had a great radio voice. Isn't that right, folks? There's Nina. She's shaking her head. And he's just got that nice edge. But tell us...
Oh, thank you.
We're going to have a program on Bastogne and on 101st and their stand during the Battle of the Bulge in December. So we'll save a lot of those little details for then. But we have Don right here with us. And what inspired you to take this and to reshape things? What inspired you to do that?
I made a couple of trips back to Europe, and I noticed a lot of people going to all the headstones, thousands of headstones, and they're Americans, and they're buried on their foreign soil. And the thing is, when they walk away, they don't know the man that's in there. They just see a name carved in stone, and that's all they know about him. And he's one of our children that started out in this country. And he had life, and he had family, and he had love. And he is not known to the people. So the thing what I wanted to do was make sure that they live through history. And
yes. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You hit the talk button.
Well. Yeah. Oh, I did.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, but anyway, there's what we're trying to do. And myself, my daughter, she's done about 90% of it, I think. I raised her right. But anyway, what we're trying to do is leave a memory not just a stone for of all the veterans. And it's really heartbreaking to go back there and see your comrades where they're buried and nobody knows them. And I want to leave a history for them.
Now, a little bit about Don Burgett. He was, you were a co-writer with Band of the Brothers, or you were a consultant?
I was a consultant, but I was never a co-writer with him. No.
Okay, but you were a consultant.
Yes, I was.
And on the Military Channel, from time to time, folks, you will see, there will be a quote or two, or will actually be a little snippet from Don himself, including a shot. And how often does that happen, that you get the History Channel that wants you to come on and give a quick quote or something? How often does that happen?
Well, they just called me.
Oh, okay.
I imagine when my books were out. Excuse me.
It would come up now.
All right.
But when my books came out, especially with General Eisenhower's okay, you might say, and we went worldwide. I had books coming out in Switzerland, Italy, and so on around the world, and I was well known at that time. I think I'm still in there someplace, but they phoned and asked me if I would come in and do them a favor, but actually they're doing me a favor too.
So folks, now remember, we're not just having a military writer, we're having a military writer of somebody who was there. This Don was there. He was there from that first night. I'm talking about now the Battle of the Bulge, from that first night when the Germans started attacking, all the way through. So when I've read these books and parts of them, I was just so impressed. And on your writing style, it's like being right there, man. You know, there's times I couldn't read but a few pages because I've had such empathy for you soldiers.
Well, thank you. Actually, my writing, I noticed when writing other people's, reading other people's writing, I saw that most of them were officers. In fact, I was the first enlisted man to write about the paratroopers and be published. But the there were three books ahead of me, and all three of them were officers. Well, they're kind of, they write in a sterile West Point style. We removed Company B and so on. And when I wrote, I was a human being. And when I wrote, I was 19 years old. I wrote later my feelings. And I wrote about as far as I could see from a foxhole. If I could see 500 yards, I wrote about 500 yards. If I could see 100 yards, I wrote about 100 yards. And when we were in hand-to-hand battle, I wrote about hand-to-hand battle. And I described it. And there's a lot of things in my books and my writing that weren't said before, and the thing is, I set up a style of writing that was personal from one human being, and I know the Germans were probably the same way, and so my writing became a style. I created an actual style of writing, and there's been a lot of copies, and that's why you see a lot more war stories coming out now by the soldiers than they had before.
Well, while you have yourself a little sip of that water, I'm going to talk to Renee. Renee, how can folks find out more information about this Kickstarter campaign that you have?
Well, you can just go to www.kickstarter.com and you can look up my father's project. It's titled My Rendezvous with Destiny.
Can they use the name of Donald Burgett, or they have to do the Rendezvous with Destiny?
No, they can do it either way. They can use his name. They can use the title of his project. They can go under publisher and then look up nonfiction and then type in his name, and you'll be directed right to his project.
Okay, let's spell that again. Donald, you all know that. Donald, middle name R, last name Burgett.
Well, either way.
I
answer to anything.
Anything. Capital B-U-R-G-E-T-T. Once again, Donald R, middle name, Burgett, last name, B-U-R-G-E-T-T. And this will be part of the Kickstarter. Kickstarter, that's .com?
Correct.
.com. Now, in closing now, what would you like to say to our audience?
Well, we would love to see these books back out. It's kind of my dad's, what do you call, bucket list that we'd like to see
Amen.
Him accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's 88 years old today.
Today!
Not today. No.
Yeah, we had to have a little bald-headed guy hit that.
Yeah, well, that sounds good to me.
Ball. We got to wait for him. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't. We don't call on him a lot, but you got to wait for him. Well, Mazel Tov, and you're 88 today.
Well, not today, but today he's 88.
Oh, okay.
April 5th, if you want to know the date.
She said it a little differently. She said, today I am 88.
Oh, correct. Okay.
But not 88 today.
Oh, okay. Mazel tov.
Yeah,
we do share something in common.
Well, I still have about a year and a half to go to be 90.
We do share something, Don. Your dad and my dad were Detroit policemen.
Yes, they were. And that was back, my dad probably came in a little before your dad.
My dad came in 37.
Well, he saw the bad parts of the Depression. But
yes.
My dad went on in 1924, and I was born in 25. So, and he went up through the Big Depression started on the 29th, 1929.
Right.
And so it went downhill from there, and then there was robberies, shootings, killing, bootlegging.
Bootlegging was okay. But,
yeah. But you name it, they had
the Purple Gang.
Purple Gang. I didn't know those guys, but I knew all of them.
Okay, Renee, we've got about one whole minute. Tell us very quickly, what would you like to tell our audience?
Well, we'd like them to go to Kickstarter.com. We're going to launch on October 1st. We have 45 days to raise the money of $20,000.
How do they donate? Do they write a check? What do they do?
Well, it's all done through Amazon, and it's a PayPal-type deal. You go in with your credit card. You pledge your amount. You will receive a reward for your pledge. You can pledge anything from $1 on up to unlimited. To help us reach our goal,
mm-hmm.
and it's done through your credit card online at Kickstarter.
Don, very quickly, what do you have to say to our audience as we're concluding here? Give us say something that you would like to say to our audience.
Well, I'd like to, first of all, tell them thank you for listening to the station, and we do need help. An old veteran that finally needs help. I never asked for it before, but I'm asking now.
Amen. Amen. Oh, wow. You couldn't say it any better. We all, from Dale, myself, and Maria, and Nina, I can see some heads bobbing right there in the control room. God bless you, and you will be back on. We're going to have updates as to this Kickstarter program. I'd like you to come back in December when we're going to do our, I want to do this.
Bastogne.
Yeah, this Bastogne.
And it was cold.
Cold. You know, and with the fog this morning that we had, I thought about you.
Yes, that was Bastogne. That fog came over. We saw the first fog, and now with Point Man going up the mountain or hill. And Bastogne there, and it was I saw it when Phillips and I, and when we got near the crest, we looked up. We were Point Men, looked up, and I counted 32 German tanks coming down. And I told Phillips, "This ain't going to be a good day."
Oh, I got goosebumps already. Well, folks, you're going to want to know all about that. You're going to want to go to veteransradio.net because we will have a book store, and Don's books will be listed there. And, of course, we're inviting him back. So Dale is going to come back into the hot seat. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Ave Maria.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Private First Class Emery Bennett, although wounded, continued to defend his position. Details after this.
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
At approximately 2 a.m., two enemy battalions swarmed up the ridgeline in a ferocious banzai charge in an attempt to dislodge Bennett's company from its defensive positions. Meeting the challenge, the defenders delivered destructive retaliation, but the enemy pressed the assault with fanatical determination, and the perimeter was imperiled. Fully aware of the odds against him, Bennett unhesitatingly left his foxhole, moved through withering fire, stood within full view of the enemy, and employing his automatic rifle, poured crippling fire into the ranks of the onrushing assailants, inflicting numerous casualties. Although wounded, Bennett gallantly maintained his one-man defense, and the attack was momentarily halted. During this lull in battle, the company regrouped for a counterattack, but the numerically superior foe soon infiltrated the position. Upon orders to move back, Bennett voluntarily remained to provide covering fire for the withdrawing elements, and defying the enemy, continued to sweep the charging foe with devastating fire until mortally wounded. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com.
History in every century records an act that lives forevermore. We'll recall as into line we fall the thing that happened on Hawaii shore. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and my name is Dale Thronberry, and I'm going to be taking care of the second half of the program. We were scheduled to have a representative from the Philadelphia Veterans. Hold on, I better read this right. The Philadelphia Veterans Advisory Commission, but unfortunately there was some sort of family emergency and they were not going to be able to be here today. But I did want to talk a little bit about this organization, and what I was looking for when I found it was, you know, we all know that Philadelphia is one of the major cities in America, and it's got a huge veterans population, and probably right now, I get the phone call now. All right. Too bad. Oh, well. If somebody is trying to call us here on Veterans Radio, the number is 877-573-7825. Unfortunately, I cannot answer the phone while we are on the air. So, if you're calling my cell, 877-573-7825. But let me tell you about this organization here. Okay, the article that caught my attention was, it says, veterans don't have to look very far for help. Whether they are veterans recently returning from battlefields in the Middle Eastern desert or drifting aimlessly through deserted streets, city, state, and federal governments make resources available to help them reintegrate into the communities they serve to protect. In Philadelphia, in an office just outside the City Hall courtyard, a branch of the Philadelphia Veterans Advisory Commission is available to help. It is directed to consult with government and nonprofit agencies that distribute veterans benefits and advise veterans of entitled benefits. It's a conduit. They don't handle the services there. They refer you to wherever you need to go. It sounds like a great idea, and there are all kinds of different organizations in Philadelphia, and we're hoping that we will hear from some of them today. If not, we'll get them back on later on as we talk about what these cities can do for their veterans, because we got to remember that, you know, if we've asked these men and women to go off to war, we got to make sure we take care of them when they get home. And it's very important that we do this. And Bob was talking about the VSOs. Almost every county in the country has a veteran service officer who can help you with the maze of the VA. your government benefits, your pensions, your disability benefits if necessary, your health care benefits if necessary. We know that the VA, at least in the vast majority of the VA hospitals around the country, you get top-notch care, and people are I don't know, they just seem to go out of their way to take care of the veterans. And it's always necessary to have these people are dedicated, these advocates for veterans. And if you know one, let us know, because we'd love to tell the story about these people, sometimes especially the non-veterans who are these advocates. And there's a little controversy going on in the Philadelphia thing that I noticed is that the two women that I had the opportunity of talking to, Wanda Pate and the other young lady, neither one of them are veterans, but they've been working with veterans for 20 and 30 years. And you got to wonder, why do they do that? Why do they continue to look out for the veterans' needs and to take care of them if they need some assistance? And we know that, you know, not vast majority of veterans don't need any assistance, and most of them would tell you they don't want it, but we need to, you know, protect them if we can, if they run into trouble. You know, I thought it was fascinating talking to Don Burgett just now, and Bob had mentioned, and he's talking about Baston and the Battle of the Bulge, but Don was also involved in the invasion of Normandy. In fact, he got there the night before everybody else did. He jumped into France, I believe his book said somewhere around 1 o'clock in the morning, to secure the roads and so forth so that when the troops hit the beaches in Normandy, they were able to move inland. And he told the story of how initially they were supposed to jump, I believe, from 1,000 feet. But because of the weather and the miscommunications and everything, planes were going off in all different directions. He ended up jumping out of an airplane at 500 feet and had about, you know, since I've never done this, only a couple of seconds to open his chute. He told me initially when I first met him that he was much taller before he did that. And I just, this guy's great. You got to go out and just read his books. I mean, it gives you such insight. And he was talking earlier about the idea of going over with his Kickstarter program, what he wants to do with these funds. And really, I encourage you to go to Kickstarter.com and search for My Rendezvous with Destiny, or type in Donald Burgett, B-U-R-G-E-T-T, so that you can help this guy out. To get these books reformatted, you know, I mean, he published these books back when they were printing presses and by hands, and we've got somebody on the phone. Okay.
No, it's just me, Dale.
No, Nina has something to say.
I just wanted to comment. Something that people should know about Kickstarter is that if the person initiating this project and the fundraising, if they don't reach their goal, all the money goes back to the donators. So that's good for the donators, but not necessarily for the person initiating the project. So I guess we should encourage everyone to take a look at Don's project, because it's got to be worthwhile, and we don't want the money to go to waste.
Right, and I think that's a very good point. You know, sometimes we think we make these donations and we're not sure where the money's going to go. With the Kickstarter program, if you don't make your goal, it goes back to you. And so they keep track of all of that and make sure that, because we had another gentleman who was on a couple of weeks ago, has a Kickstarter program to get his movie distributed. And it's hard to make money. You know, it's hard to get started out there sometimes with these ideas that these men and women are trying to put together. If you got a call for us, give us that call at 877-573-7825. Well, getting back to Don's story, was that, you know, here's a man who was talking about the cemeteries in Holland and in the Netherlands, and that the people of Holland go out and they take care of the maintenance of all of these tombstones. And there are thousands of them over there, and, you know, just row upon row of crosses. And I think that Don's goal to take care of these men's grave sites and to find out who they are. This is what's so important, and this is what we're trying to do here at Veterans Radio. And I have a little project for everybody out there. All of you that are listening probably have some sort of veterans memorial in your town, and this is something that I've been thinking about for a while. And I'd like you to go take a picture of it. If you would go take a picture of the monument to veterans in your town and send it to me, or to Veterans Radio, but you can send it to me at dale@veteransradio.net. I'd like to put together a collection of these. And the reason that I came up with this thought process was I was driving downtown Detroit, and in the middle of downtown Detroit, there is a huge memorial to Civil War veterans. And it's got names of people that were on, you know, that were in the Civil War from Michigan and so on. And as I was looking at them, and I happened to be at someplace else, and I looked at another little memorial, and I saw these names, and I wondered, who are these people? were they before they died, unfortunately, or who were they before they went into the, you know, into that particular war? And I wonder what happened to their lives afterwards. There's a teacher down in Indiana whose project in his high school history classes is that each student in the class is supposed to pick the name of a veteran from Indiana, and part of their year-long project is to find out who this person was. And I just think that that's just so cool that they can do this, because there are so many nameless veterans out there that, you know, as Don was pointing out, you know, they come from rural America. They've never been anywhere outside of their state limits and sometimes outside of their county limits. And here they are. They're sent around the world to defend you and me and all of us, and to defend the idea that, you know, that we want to be free and we want to stay that way. And they just go off and they do this. And then if they get killed, they come home and they have a, you know, a very emotional memorial service, and then that's it. And they're only known to their family. I think it's important that we know who these people are. And when we were traveling around the country this summer, and I started looking at all these different memorials, in the smallest towns, there was always a veterans memorial. And so, of course, in the bigger towns, there were huge ones. But the little ones, they were the ones that seemed to be most important, because, you know, if you have a town of 100 people and five of them have died in a particular conflict, that's a pretty high percentage. And when you look at those names and you just, I don't know, I just constantly look at the names and I go, I wonder who they were. What were they like? You know, they were in high school one time. They were athletes. They were the band guys. They were the smarty pants in the class. They were all these, you know, they were farmers. They were mechanics and so forth. And their life got stopped immediately. And I just, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking about this today, but it's just something that is just driving me crazy. So I want to make sure that you think about that when you're driving around and you see some of those little memorials out there. Please take a picture of them and send them off to me at Dale@Veterans Radio. And I want to do a program on the memorials around the country. And we're going to take a break here while we're waiting for a contact. Maybe we'll get it, maybe not. But yeah, I want you to come back. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
You buy, I'll bring you victory. Buy, 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 buy a bond. And you'll be standing by the victory arch when Johnny comes marching home again. Oh, you should need no request.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we got a call from a gentleman, Scott Golding, out there to talk a little bit about the memorial. Scott, go ahead.
Hi, guys. I just wondered, speaking of memorials, and your earlier guest, Don, was talking about remembering people, I'm wondering if people know that famous Private Eddie Slovic is buried right in Detroit at Woodmere Cemetery.
Really? I didn't know. Wasn't he the only soldier who was executed for, I don't know, I think they got him for AWOL or desertion or something.
For desertion, that's correct.
Wow, I didn't know that. Where is that cemetery?
Woodmere Cemetery, right off of Verner Highway in southwest Detroit.
Cool.
And it's also important to mention that he was later exonerated.
Right. Yeah. I remember back in the 70s or 80s, there was a special TV program all about Eddie and how eventually he was exonerated.
Yes. His wife fought for all the rest of her life to get him exonerated, and she unfortunately passed away before that happened, but she's buried right next to him. and they have some really lovely remarks on their headstones. But I just thought it's important to remember him.
I agree. Thank you, Scott. Could you tell people where that might be located in Detroit? I'm not familiar with it.
It's on the southwest side of Detroit, at the corner of Dix and Verner Highway.
Okay, Dix and Verner in Detroit.
Yes, right across from Patton Park.
You guys in Detroit, I don't know any of that stuff. All right, thank you very much, Scott. Greatly appreciate the story.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's the type of thing that I'm talking about. You know, I don't know about any of you. I don't go wandering around cemeteries a lot, but when I do, it seems like I'm always drawn to some of the monuments that have the military plaque, because you can get, by the way, veterans out there, all of you are entitled to a bronze plaque to put on your headstone if you want to, or if you're in one of those that have the stones on the ground, you're entitled to that for free. That's not the only benefit that you get when you pass away. But you read through some of those signs, and it's got, you know, whatever their rank was and where they served, or not where they served, but what war they served in. And again, it always brings me back to that idea of, I wonder what these people were really like, you know, when they were 19, as Don Brigette was talking about. We at breakfast, we were saying, you know, how did they get us to do these things? And I guess the answer came down to, is that because we were 19 and somebody, you know, they challenge us and we're going to take the challenge, and plus we were physically strong enough to do it. He said you didn't see a lot of 30 and 40-year-old infantrymen, you know, charging up the hill, because, you know, unfortunately, you just can't do that anymore. So it's not just not fair. that we had to end up getting a little bit older. So anyway, going back to that, send those pictures of those monuments and we'll talk about them. I think some of them are just beautiful, beautiful, and so touching. There's one, real quick, as I'm thinking about it, in Columbus, Indiana, and it is a huge monument, and it's got all of these pillars that are maybe 20, 25 feet high. And at the bottom of the pillars are the names of all of the veterans that had died from that particular town in all wars. But then up these columns, etched into the columns, were letters from the soldiers to their loved ones, their parents, girlfriends, whatever it is, and vice versa. And most of them, unfortunately, were written either just before they were killed, and some of them, you know, were received after the soldier the soldier was killed. It's just a very, very powerful memorial. And, you know, we can't forget, you know, never forget. Always remember is what we're, you know, our theme here at Veterans Radio. I wanted to, since we're not going to get the call that I was hoping to get, I wanted to tell another quick little story. Don Brigette and I were talking earlier about going through basic training. And so I wanted to kind of share this story with you about my experiences with basic training. We all know basic training is about 8 weeks, depending on what branch of the service you're in. It's the Marines. I know it's always longer because they, you know, they're tougher. And if you're in the Air Force and Navy, but it always seems to be this 8 weeks of intense physical training, mental training, you know, they kind of break you down and rebuild you and how they, you know, want you to look. And I had to go to basic training down in Fort Polk, Louisiana. And a portion of this story is that I'm from New Jersey originally. And when I got my orders to go to Fort Polk, I had to report to the Newark recruiting station. And when I got there, they told me I was going to fly to New Orleans. And I'd never been on an airplane at that point. And so when I called my mother on a real phone, I called her up and I said, "Well, Mom, I'm going to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and we're going to fly down there." And my mother, being of the generation of the 20s and 30s, decided that since I was going on an airplane, I had to wear a suit. And I said, "Ma, I don't have to wear a suit." She says, "You have to wear a suit." So she drove from our house down to Newark and delivered a suit. And she wouldn't leave until I gave her my old clothes and I had the suit on. So I fly down to New Orleans, and I change planes. I get on these really teeny tiny planes. They're called Treetop Airlines, or Trans-Texas, I think is what it was at the time. And we bounce around Louisiana, ended up at Fort Polk in the middle of the night. And I get off this plane, get on a bus, and then I go to the reception station. And as I'm getting off the bus, I am the only one probably within 100 miles in a suit. And my drill sergeant at the time, our welcoming sergeant, who started calling me names I hadn't heard before, called me Suit. And that was it. He says, oh, you know, you're special. You wear a suit and blah, blah, blah. He says, go stand out there in that parking lot. And all of you will remember that parking lot with all the numbers on it, usually about 100 numbers. I had to go out and stand on number 50, which is in the middle of this vacant parking lot. And he made me stand there probably for about an hour or so. It seemed like a couple of days. And every time I would move and shift, he would say, oh, you can't stand at attention. Give me, you know, gazillion push-ups. And so that was my welcoming to basic training. And I thought, well, this is going to be kind of interesting. So the next day or 2 days later, after they, you know, they gave us, give you your haircut, and you go into the barber shop, and they all have this really sick sense of humor, and they ask, you know, so how do you want it? And you say, well, just a little off the sides would be fine. And then they cut this reverse mohawk on you and start with a strip right down your head, and then they, you know, make you bald for forever. And went out to our company area, and my drill sergeant, whose real name, honestly goodness, is Robert Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, Sergeant Steele. And Sergeant Steele said, so, suit, I've heard about you. And I said, yep. You know, I didn't have a suit on, and I had the very, you know, the very nice green that you know, we all became accustomed to. And so we're standing there, and he says to my platoon, you know, our gaggle of guys, he says, okay, who here has been to college? And I had been to a number of colleges. And so my father's voice was yelling in the back of my ears, never volunteer for anything, never volunteer for anything. But I said, you know, how can it hurt? You know, I've been to college. Sure, why not? So I kind of put my hand about halfway up, and he grabbed four of us. There were only four guys out of 120 that had been to college. And he pulled us all out, and he says, okay, and he pointed at me because I was the biggest and said, you're the platoon leader. And the other three guys were the squad leaders. And that was my introduction to the military. So I think it's rather interesting, and I'm sure that all of you out there have some basic training stories that you could tell and share about either the smartest thing you ever did or the dumbest thing you ever did, because I got in trouble for guarding a tree. I was leaning against a tree. I don't know why. I was so tired, and my drill sergeant came up and asked me if I liked that tree, and I said, yes, I do. It's a very nice tree. What are you going to say? And he says, good, then climb it, and I don't want anybody else leaning against this tree. So I had to climb up into the tree and report back to Sergeant Steele every time I saw somebody lean on my tree. And so that was one of the other joys of being in the military. You know, how many holes did we dig and then fill in and move over and dig another hole? So it's just another way to get that going. So we're coming up at the end of the hour, and I apologize for the Philadelphia Veterans Advisory Commission not being on the program today, but we will get them on at some time in the future. If you've got a story you'd like us to tell, please contact us. Let us know what's going on so that we can get your story out on the air. And as Don said, if, you know, if we don't get these stories out, they're going to go away, and we want to make sure that they're on all the time. So, oh, look who's back.
Oh.
Robert is back.
Hell, do I have a story?
What happened?
I just escorted Don out to the car, and do we have time?
That's 45 it? Seconds.
Oh, well, 6th of June, we're going to be on live from Normandy. Take it from there.
Oh, you're going to Normandy?
Yes, we are.
Oh,
Veterans Radio.
I think we got to start a Kickstarter program right now in order to get that money. That's going to cost a couple of nickels to go along with. What do you got going next week?
Next week I have all about how to do business with the government.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All about procurement, all about logistics. I know that name, but they use that name. So you want to tune in next week because you want to do business with the government.
That's right. And for those of you that are on East Coast New Jersey, I will be out there next week for my 50th high school reunion. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of you next Saturday and listening to the program. Until then, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.